Kick up the leaves and the magic is lost. Tell me your blue skies fade to gray. Tell me your passion's gone away. And I don't need no care anymore.
Well, here we are. In both of our new realities, Tom. I would ask how you're doing, but I know because it's exactly how I'm doing.
You're well aware. That's... Oh, Danny boy. Hockey's a cruel, cruel sport.
And we knew that.
We did.
Right? We knew that coming in. We knew that the seeding and how you do in the regular season has less of a correlation in how you do in the playoffs than any other sport, and it's really not even close. But still, you look at what your team is able to piece together, you see the way they move the puck, you see the way that they're playing for each other, and just for a moment, for a brief and shining moment, you believe that things can be different. But ultimately, what happened over the course of the last few days was that I would say both of our franchises returned to the mean and remembered who they truly were. I said during the series when the Bruins lost game 5 and they had 2 more to close it out, I used that same terminology in a positive light. I said, as soon as the Bruins remember who they are, it's going to be fine. But what ended up happening is the Bruins remembered who they were. Not this year, not this specific group of guys, but they started to remember the logo that was on their chest. And I think the same thing somewhat happened to the Rangers when they got to the Prudential Center on Monday night. They said, I'm not going to think about the guys around us right now. I'm not going to think about how good this roster is. I'm going to remember what the jerseys that we put on every night have truly meant for the last, let's say, 25 years. Which is, I happen to get one, I'm not going to say totally fluke Stanley Cup, but a Stanley Cup that you kind of only got because the other team outchoked you. You have 0. So I think what ended up happening was, I forgot where I was even going with that in the middle, because I have been at a loss for words the entire week. Maybe you can help, Tom. Maybe you can help me figure out what's going on with us right now.
Well, so I think what you're saying is both of our franchises are remembering who we are and reverting back to that, you know, DNA that we've known our mm-hmm. whole lives,
which is being really good at front running. But then when it's time to put the nuts on the table,
mm-hmm.
you've seen it with, you know, the St. Louis teams that you guys tried to put together to get yourselves over the edge.
Oh yeah.
You went out and got yourself.
We essentially did the same thing this year.
You went out and got yourself the best American born player to ever play the game this year to maybe make things feel different. Mm-hmm. We went out and got a hard hitting 2-way defenseman who shoots the puck from the point at about 117 miles an hour. We got ourselves a third liner who plays like a bona fide first liner in Tyler Bertuzzi. It's both all of these moves to add to already great rosters. But I think what we did at the trade deadline was that we said, we've seen great teams in Rangers uniforms and Bruins uniforms. And if you just hope that they can keep that level of play up for the entire season, it's disappointment every single time. So we fortified the lines a little bit. And we both thought it would be enough to get us to, at the very least, a conference final. Maybe the most confident prediction I've ever made on this show was that we were on a collision course with each other to end up meeting in the East Final. I felt that shit in my guts.
Me as well.
There was no team in the Eastern Conference that I was afraid of more than you guys. I can be brazen and say that now that it's over. The only team I thought that had a chance of taking the wheels off the Bruins before they got to the Stanley Cup Final was you guys. And as tough as the Hurricanes are, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you felt the same way about us.
Yeah. I honestly thought it was going to be a Boston, New York semifinal. And with both of those teams out now, I'm looking at the rest of the field in the East. And as good as the East is, I'm kind of like, really? Like, we're getting, like, one of these teams is going to be in the Stanley Cup, and it just kind of sickens me in different ways.
We spent many hours of this podcast talking about how high-flying and electrifying the Eastern Conference playoffs were going to be. And now you look at the Final Four. And the most exciting thing you have going for you in that Final Four is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Pretty much. I mean, I know you think of the Florida team differently than I do, but they're kind of my pick to go all the way out of all of those teams.
I don't doubt that. And if you look at if everybody in this first round just played up to their potential, you could have had arguably the four royal families of the Eastern Conference duking it out in the second round. You could have had the Bruins against the Lightning, and you could have had the Rangers against the Hurricanes. If you look at the last 5 years, that is the top floor of the palace of the Eastern Conference, and you could have had all of them.
But no.
I lost to a team with no goalie, and you lost to Frank the Tank. So, that certainly is a fact. I didn't even really think about where this pod was going to go. Usually we have bullet points before we start these episodes, but I was going to be like, do you want to talk about the series themselves? Do you want to talk about, you know, just the overall like feeling in our stomachs right now? Like what do we want to talk about next? Cause I'm going to be honest. I don't really give a shit. So why don't you tell me, Tom?
I'm with you, bud. I'm with you. I just like astonished in the worst way possible. I mean, the Rangers that we saw in, I can't even say this playoff series, because there were times where this team dominated the Devils in games one and game two, particularly. And then, was it game five? Game six, when they won. But then the other times they look like they were an AHL team compared to the Devils. And I don't really understand. I know the Devils are a fast team. They play well together, but there's no way that this team should have looked that bad against the Devils. And at the same time, made it to a game seven against this team that was smacking up and down the ice, which is like the frustrating part. Like, I almost would have rather have been swept, you know. Like, I had so much, like, the roller coaster that was this series was unbelievable.
You're telling me, dog.
It was hype going into it. Yeah. I mean, you guys with the 3-1 lead, we're up 2-0. We're soaring. My DraftKings is trying to get me to cash out of my Rangers to win the Stanley Cup bet for like $50-$100 more than what I put in. But I'm not cashing out. Life's good. Yep. This team's rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Lose a heartbreaker in overtime, game three. Okay. Get absolutely bent over game four. Now not you're like, fine. All right. Like, that wasn't great, but listen, we're new series, right? Best of three series. Get absolutely bent over again. And then you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, luckily next game's at home. We win it. We pull it out of our ass. And then just completely unprepared for game seven.
No, even like I would say it's even more up and down because you dominated game six. Like, game six was not in doubt.
It was. And I kind of glanced over that, but it's just then the hope that was, you know, kind of came back together with that game six victory.
Mm-hmm.
To just fall absolutely on its face in game seven with the worst performance of the series by far. Mm-hmm. As a team. And that's saying something, because I thought we played like absolute dog shit in games. What was it? 5 and 4. So like, You take the team's expectations and the roster and the additions that they've made, and then you combine it with that, and it's just an absolute psychological torture chamber. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they just played terrible. Pretty much all my notes are on the analysis of game seven in the series and how that shapes out, which I could get into. But I mean, it was just a horrendous showing. And for a team whose slogan mantra is no quit in NY, oh my God, it just didn't look like they even wanted to play at all. They didn't forecheck. They didn't back check. They didn't they looked like they were like five steps behind the Devils on every play. They couldn't connect a pass to save their life. You know, it was to the point where I was getting excited just for the puck staying on someone's stick after they passed it to someone.
Once again, you're telling me.
So
yeesh.
I mean, it was just horrendous. I mean, game seven to start off, when you just absolutely, you're given three power plays to start the game on the road. You need momentum. It'd be great to score first. And that's an understatement. Great to score first.
Mm-hmm.
And you completely, one of those power plays was great. The first one was dog shit. And then the third one was meh.
Mm-hmm.
0-for-3. And then later on in the second period where you get another power play and then you give up the first goal of the game.
Yeah.
To the point where it seemed like it was the Devils' power play and not ours. Absolutely embarrassing. So again, the fact that this team was playing so bad compared to the Devils, and yet was still in these games to where like they just needed to score on the power play in the playoffs, which is not much to ask for a team with this much firepower. And mm-hmm. they couldn't even do that. Just absolutely disgraceful. But that kind of leads me to the one highlight of this team, this series, obviously Igor Shesterkin.
Sure.
And you know, like you said before, our franchise is playing to our core DNA that we've known. I can't say that I'm shocked that we squandered yet another elite playoff goaltending performance by this Rangers team. You know, it's those 2010s all over again.
Sure.
But I mean, Igor was fantastic. He had a 931 save percentage and a 1.96 goals against average for this series. Absolutely unbelievable. There's no doubt in my mind he's the best goaltender in the world. If I had to choose anyone to be in net for a 7-game series, I'm choosing Igor Shesterkin. It's not even funny. And he deserves much better. One other guy that I'd throw in there who I thought was like the only high motor guy that I really saw forechecking, taking penalties, causing disruption, throwing the body. Tyler Mott. I call him Dominic Moore 2.0 because Dominic Moore was so huge to those Ranger playoff teams back in the 2010s, where he could provide offense from the fourth line. He's a guy defensively you don't want to go up against, and he's just going to be nagging at you the entire game type thing. The exact type of player that you want for the playoffs, and that's exactly why the Rangers went out and got him for the second year in a row. So I have to give him some props there.
I just picture you looking at like the full list of the Rangers roster and seeing the goalies at the top and then the rest of the roster as the page goes on, and just looking at it and going, okay, let's go over who showed up for the Rangers here. All right. Obviously Igor at the top. And your eyes go down and they go down further. No, nope, not him. Not him. Not Loff. We've gotten to Tyler Mott. He showed up.
And
it's on like the back of the page, like the Mad Minute in third grade that you didn't even know was there.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, Yeah, there's somebody.
And I'm saying that like he showed up and he had no points. That's what we're working with this series, but like sure. For real,
can I find let me find somebody that's test. Just not a minus six. We'll start there,
right? Like he's a minus one, but you get the difference. But no, he is the only player that was like out there that I was like, he's playing for a Stanley Cup. You know, like he's out there and he's playing playoff hockey. He's playing at the top of his game, which is all I want out of the players. If it doesn't work out, fine. But like, none of these players played their best hockey that they could, and that's inexcusable. But you know, to just go down the list, and my notes start off with everyone sucked, but Igor. But to start off, I guess after. I would say Mott, which is the eye test, the two best statistical players in the goals and assist column were Kreider and Fox. Without Kreider on the power play, I don't know what the hell we would be like in this series. But even all of that was, you know.
I mean, Kreider won you the first late. Two games, right?
You know, like, I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
But I mean, both of them. I think Fox particularly seemed like he wore down towards the end of the series, but because both of them had huge, huge blunders and did not play well last night in Game 7 whatsoever. Kreider on giving up that shorthanded goal to open it up, and then Fox later on in the game. It just was not two of your top guys, not what you want. Another top guy, Panarin, no goals, two assists. That's inexcusable. Again, just completely disappeared. I don't really know why. You know, he's actually usually one of the Rangers' most consistent players.
Sure.
I noticed from watching this whole season, I kind of noticed him, I want to say, like a little off. In like the second half of the season, he started off very slow as well, but it just seemed like he wasn't connecting passes as much as he usually was. He wasn't his usual wizard self on the ice. I don't know if it's an injury related or whatever, but there was a little bit of a difference in Panarin. I'm not worried about him in any way, but it was just a very, very weird thing to see him just be completely out of it. Mika, pretty much the same way. I didn't really see anything that would have indicated this in the playoffs, or from the regular season in going into the playoffs, but he kind of went away, and maybe that's a credit to the Devils defense on that.
Bro, Mika is a guy that you look at as well as he does in the regular season, like even just down to like his face and his build, you look at that guy and be like, that guy is going to be a pain in the ass in the playoffs. Like that guy is going to be a fucking thorn in the side of any team that they play. Like Mika's going to have like some overtime winners. He's going to, you know, create some crazy turnovers. Like he just seems like he has that little bit of, I was going to say devil magic, Freudian slip, but a little bit of magic in him to really step up and be a gamer, which like he usually is.
He usually is. That's but, what's so weird about this. It's like, I can't even like explain this. It's just like, they all just got space jammed of all their powers. Like I don't understand it. To keep going down the list. Tarasenko. I don't really have any issues with how he played. To be honest, he was, outside of Kreider in the goals column, he was the most consistent on offense. And honestly, I kind of saw him as more of a threat to the Devils than Kreider, even though Kreider was scoring more. Tarasenko was generating so much more dangerous chances, which is what I like to look for in when I'm watching playoff hockey. It's like we were not generating dangerous scoring chances whatsoever, and we were making it so easy on the Devils' goaltending, which they basically had none. And we made an AHL goaltender look like a god. And so, you know, I can't really complain about Tarasenko whatsoever. But the other acquisition that we got, Patrick Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Rangers Twitter has been ablaze over Kane. There's been a lot of interesting takes from people.
Let it out.
So Kane coming over to the Rangers has been Ranger fans' wet dream for years now. When it finally came to be, Ranger Nation was, as you would expect, ecstatic over it.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I think people thought he was just going to be 2012 Patrick Kane. I never really expected that, but I also didn't really expect him to just be a lamppost for 60 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps it's age, perhaps it's this lingering hip injury. Maybe that explains why we got him for such a deal, because it was known that he had a hip injury, and the price was right, and it was better than, you know, say like Capocacco being our second line, first line winger.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm fine there, but I mean, it was just not enough. The Devils players were skating laps around him. I didn't really think his skating was all that bad, but he didn't seem like he wanted anything to do with taking any contact whatsoever. Playing defense, forechecking, backchecking, he basically did none of it but stand there and try to dish out sauce passes on the power play. Mm-hmm. Basically all he was good for. And I wonder if that's all he's good for now in the NHL. Like if that's just his role now, he's just a power play specialist. So now with those two guys, Kane and Tarasenko, when it comes to the off season and keeping guys, I'm okay with Kane walking, especially if it's going to be for a significant amount of money. I would like to bring Tarasenko back. I think we could get him on a team friendly deal.
Okay, I was going to ask if those either of those trades had any control. I didn't think they did.
I don't think Tarasenko's might.
Okay. I thought I was pretty sure those were both rentals, but I wasn't. But
I
100% sure.
I'm pretty sure they are both rentals. But yeah, and then the kid line was just, I mean, they broke it up, but it just wasn't, they just didn't do anything whatsoever. So, you know, a lot has come down on Gallant, rightfully so. Yep. And honestly, I think if my thought before game seven was if they dropped this game, that he'd be sent out the door. I don't know if that's going to happen. I feel like they might have made that decision already. I could be very wrong in saying that. But I think also part of my decision making in that is that I don't really view this as Gallant's fault completely. I really think this was on the players and just a lack of execution.
Sure.
You know, the Rangers tried to game plan around the Devils, what it seemed like. It seemed like they kind of had it working in game six. But it's just crazy. I just can't put it all on the coach. And I get it. If you want to, you know, make some changes, that's where you're going to go instead of blowing up an entire roster. But, and so post game for Gerard Gallant, when asked about it with the talent on the roster and what he thinks about it, his quote was, and he's getting a lot of flack for this quote. And you'll probably catch on to why, but he said, I love to have talent, but if you love to have work, but you love to have work ethic and more forecheck and stuff like that. We just didn't get it done. He's getting a lot of flack on the stuff like that part of it, which is like, I get it, Ranger fans, but you're just upset right now. He's speaking in the moment. I probably would have said something similar if you're in that. But I think he's absolutely right. You need to have a work ethic in the playoffs. And this team didn't. And maybe you put that on the coaches. But they had a work ethic in the regular season. This team came back from so many deficits and came back and won games. So I don't want to hear that it was like, oh, the coaches didn't get them ready. Kreider has more game sevens than the Bruins do combined. Like than the Bruins do. Or sorry, since 2012. Chris Kreider has played in more game sevens than the entire Bruins franchise has.
Okay.
Right? Collectively. So, like, you're telling me that's a coaching? The coaches aren't getting them ready? There's plenty of experience, especially compared to the Devils. So, like, I don't want to hear that.
Let's unpack that stat for a second.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
That's basically just saying the Rangers have played in more game sevens than the Bruins in the last 10 years. Unless I'm wrong.
Essentially, but what I'm saying is that, like, Chris Kreider,
that's a really weird way of phrasing that stat.
Like, okay.
Chris Kreider has not played for any other teams.
No, I understand, but like not everyone on this Ranger team has played for the Rangers throughout that whole season. So what I'm saying is there are guys on this roster that have the playoff experience that know what it takes to win playoff games.
Sure. Okay.
So to put that on Gallant for not getting this team ready is just you miss me on that one.
I see.
It's not like we haven't been there before. Apologies if I didn't articulate that the best. But so there you go. And the forecheck part of that quote, I think, is really on point. I was screaming at my television to forecheck this Devils team so they couldn't set up their neutral zone trap bullshit. Because in my eyes, that was, and I'm not a hockey strategy guy. I didn't play. I know very little, but I felt that was a good strategy to go out and just don't let them set up the thing that you can't beat. In the first place, and put the pressure on them and keep it in their zone. I felt like that was a good idea. And there was just none of that at all. And the reason why I brought up Tyler Mott in the beginning is because he was, him and that fourth line was basically the only line that was doing anything productive to disrupt the Devils going north south down this down the ice.
Well, as someone who does play hockey and is vaguely is familiar with hockey formations and how you counter this with this and all that, the way you beat a trap defense is with speed, puck movement, and a proper transition game. And as you have already said, the Rangers just were not interested in any of those things.
Nothing. No, we could not leave our zone.
No,
to save our ass at all.
I'm gonna get to how many, because like there have been the vast majority of this rant from you on where it went wrong for the Rangers is literally just taking the words right out of my mouth with exactly what the Bruins did, and I'm gonna get there.
Okay.
But before we transition to my team, I want to give you my thoughts on yours.
Sure.
First off, I know we're not really in the mood for ha-has today, but as you were describing the role Gallant's playing and what the fans are saying Gallant isn't instilling in this team that they need, the two biggest things you mentioned were work ethic, toughness, and focus. And I want to focus on work ethic. You say the New York Rangers may be looking for a new coach and need someone to work with. Oh, you got a promising young core, but they don't have any grit and they don't have any work ethic.
Where are you going with Tortorella?
Might I suggest bringing back? It all comes back to torts, Tom. I don't know how many times I have to say on this podcast that I think what this Ranger team needs is a heavy dose of torts in practice. And it's becoming truer and truer by the day. I told you this like at the beginning of the season, and you said, if Tortorella gets within 1,000 feet of this young core, I'm going to kill him and then myself. But just listening to you say, okay, Gallant's coming under fire because he's not giving the team any grit or work ethic. I'm just sitting there like with my arms wide open, just being like, Tom,
oh my God,
when you're ready to come back to the light, we're happy to have you. Jeez. If you want to, the day you want to come out and say and agree with the gospel that what this Ranger team needs is John Tortorella back, we're happy to have you.
I mean, I love me some torts.
John Tortorella is the solution to every problem coaching wise you just described with the New York Rangers.
Do you want to know, this will perfectly describe how I feel about this right now. When you were like, do you know who I'm thinking of in this situation? And I was thinking of the correct man. However, the way he was in my brain right now was you were going to come out and be like, and his name is John Tortorella.
That would have been good. That's
how I feel about this. It's just like complete Mickey Mouse out of nowhere. I'm back. Like, John Tortorella, you can't get rid of me type thing.
John Tortorella needs to be in practice with Lof, making him run suicides and a puke bucket at center ice and calling him a worthless, unlovable maggot every day in practice. I think that's what the kid line needs. I think that's what Patrick Kane needs. I think Torts might be the cheat code.
I think Kako definitely.
Kako, great example.
Yep. Holy shit. How many times am I going to see one stick handle, two stick handle, turnover the puck? Like, he needs to do something. He needs to watch some Rick Nash film or whatever. The guy's like 6'4". Protect the puck, for crying out loud.
He can watch some me. As we've been over in our text thread, I did wear 61 in beer league this year. So if he wants to take notes from a real 61 who knows how to score and protect the puck, I'm open. And my games are free. Like, you can just come.
Yeah.
Whenever you want to come to Veterans Memorial Rink in Somerville, Massachusetts, I will be there putting on an offensive clinic.
There you go. Capo like Caco, reach out in the DMs of Julia Gagliardi.
Yes,
and she will. She will get you the film.
She will not only get you the film. She will be the only other person in the bleachers. It's consistently me and all the guys I play with, and hey, look out, and I'm the only one on the ice with somebody that loves me. Apparently,
one fan in the stands for the good guys. That's a packed barn, in my opinion.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
The ratio's there. I've pretty much said everything I need to say about this absolute dumpster fire of a collapse. But I don't know, dude. I kind of feel like if we just gave you Shesterkin, like, we'd have a combined cup with the way our teams have, like, been. You guys seem like you guys were pretty good on the offensive side. And we had no answer. You guys, you know, came into a goalie. A carousel, I guess, is the best word I can't think of the actual word that I'm trying to think of, but
tandem is the word you're looking for.
Tandem, no, it's like QB controversy, maybe is what I'm thinking of.
Okay, yeah,
like a controversy. Who are we going to start?
A controversy until Jim Montgomery, for some reason, decided to make it a controversy, but get to that as well.
Got it. He stepped in, mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. I guess Igor fills that, and then, you know, we go and win a cup as the New York Bruins, the Boston Rangers, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is what it is. Oh, one thing I will say on the Patrick Kane thing, it is, like, very unfortunate how it ended, too. It's like, it just, your childhood dreams, you get it, and then it's absolutely the opposite of what you wished it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So. That's that. But how are we doing up in Beantown?
Now, imagine if Patrick Kane had been playing for your team for 20 years and the exact same thing happened where he tried to contribute, but at the end of the day, he's 37 years old. And, the fact that you've developed literally zero in-house centers since you pulled him up in 2002 begins to kind of rear its head. Just imagine if Patrick Kane had played two decades for you guys and you had the same degree of helplessness and uncertainty around his present and his future. That's how we're doing in B-Town right now. So... obviously, I let Tom go first, but the lion's share of the choking blame on this podcast goes to me. The Rangers lost to a team that I think 90% of the country thought was better than that they were better than. And they had a 2-0 game, 2-0 series lead with three home games left. And that's obviously not great. But the Bruins were up 3-1 on the Florida Panthers, a team that they had a 47-point lead over in the regular season. And much like Tom described with his team, everything that they did well in the regular season just evaporated all at once. Let's start with, how it ended. You lose game 7 in overtime. You drop 2 overtime games this series just because you didn't feel like winning them. The first overtime game, Linus Ullmark goes behind the net, misplays the puck. You have a giveaway and you give that game away. This game, a game where you should have had an equal amount of nothing to lose attitude like the Panthers did all series. There's a scrum to the side of the net behind Jeremy Swayman, and nobody picks up Matthew Tkachuk in front of the net, and nobody is interested in getting the puck away from the side of the net. You start there. You start looking at, okay, that was the more dramatic focal points of how you drop the series. Now let's look at the more systemic ways you drop this series. Much like yours, our blue line and our star defenseman just completely forgot how to play the game of hockey. Hampus Lindholm was an active liability out on the ice, and Charlie McAvoy had, bar none, the worst seven games of his hockey career, which culminated in him ending up tipping the game-tying goal with 59 seconds left in Game 7 into his own net because he was standing sideways with his stick down like he was trying to tip it in instead of facing the shooter like a defenseman should actually do who's trying to block the shot. The defense was an absolute no-show most of the series. The offense had its moments. The offense actually did come roaring back from a 2-0 deficit in Game 7. It really looked like they figured out what they needed to do to win this final game. They're down 2-0. They end up 3-2 with a minute to go before that McAvoy tip occurs. David Pastrnak, who had been largely a no-show for most of the series, ended up with two goals in game number 7. After contributing in Game 6 as well. Really, the only guy you look at, and this is a Tyler Mott situation for us, even though it's a slightly higher caliber player, the only two guys, well, the main guy you look at this roster and say, that is the only dog you had on the ice for the entire series, was a guy that you added in the deadline in Tyler Bertuzzi. Tyler Bertuzzi was trying to win a Stanley Cup for a team that he had been with for about 10 weeks instead of 20 years, like the rest of the core. On top of that, Brad Marchand also had some great moments in this series. I'm happy with his effort this series. He really seemed like he was trying to win a Stanley Cup as well. Patrice Bergeron, it came out that he missed the first four games of the series, and he played the last three with a herniated disc in his back. Speaking of injuries, Linus Ullmark did not start a game until Game 7, and it comes out yesterday that he was playing through a serious debilitating injury, I believe was the terminology. But somehow, despite the fact that you were lauded for your goalie tandem being one of your biggest strengths throughout the season, you leave an injured, battered Linus Ullmark in there to single-handedly lose you Game 5 and Game 6 because he straight up cannot move. He cannot get in and out of the butterfly. If you watch that game, like he just couldn't make goalie movements, and pucks were going over his shoulder as a result. He was getting beat down low. That was not Linus Ullmark, and he should not have been started by any stretch of the imagination in 5 or 6. So much like the Rangers, it was kind of just a top to bottom failure, and you could not point at one thing that made the Bruins a great team in the regular season that carried over into the playoffs. Their biggest strengths were that they played great defense, they were getting great goaltending play, and they conducted their end-to-end play like it was a symphony. Like, their breakout game was flawless. Their puck movement and their passing was absolutely, like, video game perfect. But then in the series, they looked lost out there. They, much like the Rangers, they did not have one tape-to-tape pass in them the entire series, it felt like. And just playing scared to a team you had no business playing scared to. So I know I said at the beginning of this rant, it feels like a lot of what you just said I would have just been parroting, but I think when great teams collapse, it is a lot of the same things. So here we are. We're stuck with this, in my opinion, pretty mid second round in the Eastern Conference as a result, because my team and your team couldn't hold up our ends of the bargain.
Yeah. I mean, not to, you know, sound like sore losers or anything like that. The East is talented. That that's a good Devils team.
Yeah, great Devils team that made moves at the deadline to bolster themselves, and they literally won as a result.
And they played together. You know, they did everything that the Rangers should have done. Same thing, you know, with the Panthers. The Panthers played well. And not that they don't deserve to be there, but yeah, you look at the matchups now in the second round, and you're kind of like, like most of that is a rivalry bias for sure. And the Leafs being the Leafs, but I mean, it would have looked a lot sexier seeing Boston, Toronto, you know, than that. So
yeah, it would have been like Boston, Toronto is a great, just like pure, everyone's in their prime. Well, not in their primes, but just pure, like heavyweight bout. And then I feel like Rangers Hurricanes was like a very good, like young, fast matchup. Like those, both of those matchups were going to be really interesting in their own way.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So still, I mean, yeah, the Devils matchup too was a pretty young,
and that is also
and fast matchup too.
Devils Hurricanes, I think, might be the most interesting round two matchup in either conference.
I agree. There's going to be, I think the Toronto Florida series is just going to be offense. And then, like football game offense. Mm-hmm. And then, the Devils and Hurricanes game, I think you're going to get a really good blend of both defense and really good offense. So, like, they'll be entertaining. But, I mean, you can't say with two original six teams, you know, with heavyweights, that it doesn't look weird in the playoff landscape.
Yeah, and speaking of this Toronto Florida series, like as a Bruins fan, like what do you want out of that? Like, do you want the Leafs to come out and turn them into chop liver immediately and win in four or five? And just further bolster, like, what the fuck were you doing out there?
Right.
Or do you want to watch the Florida Panthers go and play for a shot at the Stanley Cup? Like, like what, as a hockey fan, like, this is where, you know what? As much as I talk about sports being rigged ever since sports betting was legalized, like, I think it, there really has been an element of the leagues getting in bed with the gambling companies and saying, okay, 90% of the money in the nation is on this one team. Give me a call or two in the other direction. You had two original six teams in game sevens to move on to game two to meet the Leafs and the Hurricanes. You were going to have three of your four darling children as the final four in the Eastern Conference. That might have been a good time to script it.
Yeah, that would have been a good script.
That might have been a decent time to say, okay, the New Jersey Devils and the Florida Panthers have sure had their fun, but there's money to be made.
And on top,
there are asses to be put in these seats, and we are not getting that with the Panthers and the Devils.
Another thing too is I didn't watch the series too closely, but I did follow it. But the Toronto Lightning, Toronto and Tampa Bay series, a lot of people said that Tampa Bay looked like the better team, and the statistics were like they kind of looked like they should have won. So like,
yeah,
you know, the script was really flipped in a lot of different ways.
And that was the biggest gasp moment for people who have followed hockey for the last 10, 20 years to say, for maybe the first time ever, the Toronto Maple Leafs are winning playoff games that they don't have any business winning.
Right.
Like traditionally they only win the games that they are like truly the better team in. And where they lack is that they can't steal games. All Toronto has done so far this playoff is steal games.
Right.
Like that's the scary part. Like it really feels like that part of the Leaf identity of like when the back's against the wall, when it's time to really come out and like steal a game, like you wouldn't even imagine that the Leafs were capable of that.
That's playoff hockey though. You need that in the playoffs. That's literally what the Devils did in game three. And it turned the entire series
mm-hmm.
around with that overtime winner.
Yeah.
So
the comical thing, I think, in the Eastern Conference is you had Bruins Panthers, which was obviously a huge shock. You had Devils over Rangers, which I think was a shock for everybody outside of New Jersey. And then down the line, if you look towards the end of the Eastern Conference, like Hurricanes Islanders was just like, yeah, the Canes are going to win in 5 or 6, and it's not going to be a particularly interesting series. And that's mm-hmm. just exactly what happened.
Yeah, literally.
Like the on the other side of the fucking continent, the Seattle Kraken are taking out the defending Stanley Cup champions. Over here, you have a wild card team knocking off the President's Trophy winners, and the Devils beating the Rangers. And then, oh, everything's topsy-turvy. And then, oh, yeah, the Hurricanes are going to decisively beat the Islanders, and it's not going to be a particularly interesting series. Like, yeah. Like it seemed like the only ones not living in the bizarro world were
yeah.
the Islanders and the Hurricanes, which, like, that was a fun, like, contrast to everything. Like, you look at the entire landscape of the NHL after round one, and it's like, yeah, the Hurricanes just took care of business as the better team, and they're moving on to round two, which is the most amount of excitement you're supposed to get out of round one.
Right. Well, like, I think what it comes down to is just that the underdog, the Isles, they're not a particularly interesting hockey team.
No.
In any facet. And they're probably the most boring hockey team in the league. So if they win, it's like, if they win the series, it's like, okay. But like now we have too. to watch the trap for another series, and that's not right. fun. So like
they're doing,
we're gonna watch 2-1 hockey for 7 games. Like
they're the Devils without any exciting players.
Yeah, like they yeah. Like Barzal, that's it.
Like bro, when's the last time like you heard about Matthew Barzal at like a national level? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like he's good to represent the Isles every year at the All-Star game, but like other than that, because of the way they play, he can never put up any points.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast around him has dwindled over the years. You know, they've had Anders Lee and Eberle went off to Seattle and is doing well there, but
yeah,
no, they're boring. Straight up boring. Yes. And we'll just be like, yeah, we'll just hope the puck doesn't go in, and hopefully we'll score one, and that'll be how we win games.
Mm-hmm. I think like that equivalent series in the Western Conference, I think was Dallas, Minnesota, where it's like these are two just good, like textbook good hockey teams. Like Kaprizov has like superstar potential. That's the only player in that series that like you think has the ability to like take over the playoffs at some point. These are just two good playoff teams going in. Everybody, the consensus was like, I think Dallas is more on the better side of good, and they'll probably win in 5 or 6 too.
Yeah,
and that's also exactly what happened.
They won the division, so I think they we'll did. Just go
yeah, that's
them.
True. Yeah,
you know what I mean, like that kind of thing. It's like, oh, right. they're the number one.
Yeah.
So the next round for you.
Which of these green assholes is going to take up a spot in the final four and just, you know
yeah,
what I
right?
mean?
Yeah, no, seriously.
Well,
but,
okay. So let's pivot to this.
Sure.
We kind of talked about how Jersey Carolina is maybe the best of a bad situation for the NHL playoffs so far.
It'll be entertaining.
Is that the only matchup you're interested in watching in round two? Like, is there any series in the NHL that you think has a chance of you watching at least a portion of every game from here on out?
So I give so little shit about hockey now. I'm going to look at these matchups.
I'm so happy that was your answer. I'm so excited to just forget this entire sport exists.
I just don't care.
No,
I'm
so happy you're with me there. Like, I thought you were going to be like, well, I'm still a hockey guy at the end of the day. I don't give a fuck about this.
No,
I gotta watch somebody. I gotta watch somebody lift the Stanley Cup at the end of this nonsense.
Absolutely.
No, thank
not.
You.
I mean, I think the Panthers Leafs would be a fun, explosive series.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
If you like the overs, you know, if you like betting those overs. Devils Hurricanes will be good. Oilers Golden Knights, like low key, that could be like an interesting game. Oilers don't really play defense either.
As you watch Knights Oilers, if you're a hockey guy keeping up with these playoffs, I want you to keep in the back of your head that the Bruins fired Bruce Cassidy because he was mean a couple times to Jake DeBrusque. I want you to keep that in the back of your head. The Bruins fired Bruce Cassidy because he was not nice to some players. And now he's about to play the Edmonton Oilers for a shot for a place in the Western Conference Finals. Just if you catch any of that series, just in the back of your head, the Bruins fired this guy for being mean. Just hold on to that.
So do you have any remorse about the Montgomery signing now, or is it more of a pro Cassidy, or is it anti Montgomery? Where is this coming from?
You can check my Twitter. I have been consistent with this since they were talking about firing him the day that they actually fired him. Him achieving success with Vegas and them being one of your only home losses of the year was to Vegas in a shootout. I have been maybe the most vocal proponent of firing Bruce Cassidy was a scapegoat for management, and it was not a good hockey move.
Ah, okay.
And I looked like an absolute fool during the regular season because, you know, they had the start that they did and they had the season that they did. And you look at that and say, huh, maybe it was a coaching issue. Like maybe Bruce Cassidy was holding this team back. And then they lost in the playoffs because they got outcoached primarily. If you start Jeremy Swayman in game 5, you win the series, plain and simple. If you don't mix up the lines for seemingly no reason and you don't put Orlov with McAvoy on the top line, a pairing that has been shown time and again to not work, you win the series. If you have a coach that has been there and done that, I mean, Bruce Cassidy coached this team in a Stanley Cup final where they also didn't show up, but at least Bruce was holding them accountable in the post game and working on things that they were struggling with. Like what held the Bruins back in game 1 and game 2 is what cost them the series in game 7. That's a coaching issue. You couldn't take care of the puck in your own end. You couldn't connect passes. And you were all bunched up no matter where you were on the ice. That's a coaching issue. Like, there were so many coaching decisions in this series that I don't think Bruce Cassidy makes as a seasoned guy with playoff experience and a guy that has experience coaching these players in particular, that I think win you this series pretty easily. You win this series in 5 if Bruce Cassidy is your coach, and I believe that in the depths of my soul. I do.
So is it fire Montgomery season? Where
some people
are
saying, well, here's the thing, like you don't know where to go because this guy is going to win the Jack Adams in 2 weeks,
right?
And we're still like huddled around wondering like whether this guy should come back for a second year.
Right.
Like, you're in an impossible situation with Jim Montgomery.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the hell you do. I'm not a fire Montgomery guy. I'm not a Montgomery got us here guy either. I've never been a huge Montgomery guy. I was happy that the Bruins were performing well with him at the coach, but even down the stretch,
no attachment there. Whatsoever.
Even down the stretch, you had a feeling that didn't have really much to do with coaching. Patrice Bergeron is the head coach of this team.
Yeah.
Like, what is Jim Montgomery doing? And he proved in the playoffs that he, you know, might have been more of a passenger this whole time than a lot of people let on. So that's where I'm at with Jim Montgomery. I don't know. Fair. If I'm the GM, I don't think you can. It's like, what do you do with a guy who has done literally the best and worst thing in the history of your franchise in his one season as head coach? What the fuck do you do with that? I'm asking, like, a guy who has done the best and worst thing objectively in the history of your franchise in his one and only season with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do with that, Tom?
He built this beautiful, beautiful house, and then he just burnt it to the ground.
Yeah. And again, like, did he build that house? Or did,
responsible for
it? Or did Patrice Bergeron build this house? Or did David Krejci coming back build this house? Like, did the rise of this great young defensive core build this house? You don't know that for sure, but you do know for sure that Jim Montgomery's decisions cost you this series.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take the blame off the players, because I think they are as equally to blame. As you said, I don't want the players to be exonerated from blame because they didn't show up as much as Montgomery didn't. But I have to say I'm leaning towards pessimism on Jim Montgomery.
Mm.
I'm leaning towards pessimism. If you look at it at a granular level, he made no adjustments. He held nobody accountable. He fucked up the lines and he fucked up the goaltending decision. And I think if you reverse any of those one mistakes, you win the series. One out of the four, you win the series.
Yeah. It's for that same token that, like, I am slightly on the side of optimism for Glamp, because I can't really point to any decision that he made that went wrong or that caused the team to play like this, at least on the surface. I guess game planning, whatever, is a different story that you don't really get to see as a fan. But, there's no buzz with this Ranger. I don't know how I could put that on Glenn.
Like, the thing is, it's so hard.
Go out there and play hockey. Like, go play hockey.
Right.
Like you've done for 82 games.
It's so hard to pinpoint what is and isn't a coaching issue. There are the telltale things, like if you're taking a lot of bad penalties, or if you're having line trouble, or if you're making personnel decisions meaning the personnel you have, who's going to play. Making those decisions poorly, those are objectively coaching issues. That's like a lot of my problem with Jim Montgomery.
Yes.
Where I think the Rangers are a lot more interesting is that I'm with you. I think it's much more of a player issue. But if you look at what went wrong with this team, like, do you have a good roster? Yes. Are they talented enough to win a Stanley Cup? Yes. Do they have chemistry? Yes, they do. Was this roster constructed with chemistry and being actually able to play with each other in mind? Yes. Okay. You have talented players. The GM did their job. Like, that not coming together, like, that's the coach's job. Like, that is what you pay a coach to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think the part, though, that's left out there that, like, really comes into the mix in the playoffs versus the regular season, because they're two different animals, is that high motor. We're going to be in your ass for 60 minutes. We're on the puck before you are, or if you're on it before us, we're going to be smacking you up against the boards, forechecking, disrupting passes, getting passing lanes. They didn't do anything to make the Devils uncomfortable.
Yep. Yep.
The Devils were able to just sit there, wait, pass it where they wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, wait for things to open up. And vice versa, the Rangers were suffocated the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't have a puck on their stick for 2 seconds.
Sure.
Or get the puck out of the zone, or you know, just make a simple pass. Like, I think what's sticking in my mind so much that it's like, this isn't as much a coaching thing, is there were literally passes to players across the ice, fair, like a long pass, but you're in the NHL in the playoffs, you make this pass. Mm-hmm. And they're just 4 feet to the left or right.
Yeah.
Of the guy's stick.
That those and are the I'm ones just that
beside myself.
You. Like I'm if, just if like, you turn what it are over, we doing? If you turn it over and it gets picked off in the middle of the ice, that's one thing. Like the passes that go he's to open. Nobody,
he's open.
Those kill you.
How are you not hitting him? He's yeah. You know what I mean? Or like Kane passing it to nobody. And then it's a turnover going down the ice the other way. Like, mm-hmm. That's not on the coach.
Yeah, exactly.
At
yeah,
all.
That's a good point.
And those were the things that stuck out in my mind, which is why we lost this series. Because when it came down to it, it was a game 7. And if you really look at it, every single game but the OT game was pretty much a blowout.
Sure.
So sure. If you really want to look at it that way, we pretty much lost in overtime.
Yeah.
In game 7. If you want to look at it that way, basically a toss up. This series was 50-50, and I kind of view it as we lost it in game 3. So if I'm the Rangers front office, I think I'm rolling the dice with Gallant. But
it's so funny how this shit snowballs, man. Because like
it's crazy. Every year we deal with this with the Rangers. I feel like there's a crisis at the end of the year every year. Mm-hmm. Last year there was Tom Wilson. This year it's this epic collapse. It's like when are we just gonna kind of like enjoy the rebuild that they've done and the work that the front office has done for the last 4 or 5 years?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. On the flip side, us too. Like, when are we gonna be able to push Patrice Bergeron, who Bergeron and Marchand, a core that everyone agrees should have more than one Stanley Cup. Like, when are we actually going to be able to get these guys to the next level? Like, it just feels like you keep pushing the boulder up the side of the hill and it never ends up, you just keep climbing. Like, it never ends up going anywhere. And for the last 10 years, the vast majority of that has been on ownership, not being able to put the guys around him. This year, you got the guys around him, and it just so happens that most of them shit themselves at the same time, and also he was playing with a herniated disc. Like, the law of averages say that once over the course of a decade, you're going to have everything line up at once.
Right.
Not the case.
Right. Yep. Or in the Rangers case, the last almost 3 decades.
Yeah, now that you guys are out, it's an official 30 years without a cup.
On top of everything, I'll just end on this. I'm not really upset about it, but it's just like a little cherry on top of it all. That like there were so many stars aligning from what it seemed like with like the 94 season. It was like there was like a game 7 with the Devils where you had to win game 6 and game 7.
Messier guaranteed win, right?
Messier guaranteed win. And it just, you know, Shesterkin midseason pulled out the Richter mask and he was rocking that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's sexy. And it's like, let's fucking go. We added guys. And then it just ends this way. And it was like the first time that like the Knicks and the Rangers were in the playoffs in the same season in forever. And both the Knicks and the Rangers in 94 made it to the finals. So there was just a lot like kind of lining up in similarity there, but
well, you'll end with that. I'll end with anyway. This.
Yeah.
If you are hitching your dreams of playoff grandeur to the success of the New York Knicks, I would recommend taking up another hobby. But we'll go ahead and put a lid on this one. I mean, I promised y'all the most depression-laden podcast we've had so far yet. And I think we've achieved that goal this week, Tom.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I've been looking forward to recording this ever since the game went final. I feel like now that this is on the tape, I can kind of put this behind me. I feel like I can kind of start, you know, moving
the different
past
stages
this.
Of grief.
Yeah, it's like once you stamp it and like you really like make it real by like going on the tape and talking about it and like going out in front of my biggest judicial counsel, which is you.
Yeah.
Then you can really kind of start to say, all right, I've done everything I can do with it.
Yeah.
Now
this podcast and this platform is very therapeutic for us in a way, where we could kind of hash out all of our frustrations, and then, you know, things tend to kind of feel better after it's all out in the open. So whether we're each other's judge and jury, whether we're each other's therapist, we're in this bout of sports depression together. So,
well, it's been a good one, and I'm glad. Yeah. I said I was going to end on that, but I have one more thing to end on.
Go ahead.
I'm just glad that Tom can move on and finally enjoy his Yankees, who are in last place by themselves. Good night.
Yes. Because you had a bad day, you're taking one down, you sing a sad song.